All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's my privilege and honor to introduce our speaker today. Her topic is the presence of God's grace. In the presence of God's grace, Catherine Milner Hieronymus, CS from Colorado Springs. If you read the call letter, you'll get a better sense of introduction there, because Catherine provided it. But what I want to say is I'm so grateful that she agreed to be our speaker. She's one of our longtime Christian Science Nurse volunteer house practitioners. There are a few in the audience today. It's something we started about 20 years ago, and we're just so grateful for the support of all of the volunteer practitioners that help with support Wide Horizon and its ministry of Christian Science Nursing. So please welcome Catherine Hieronymus.
Thank you, Brian. How does that work, Brian? Is that good? Okay. It is really a pleasure to be here and to see everyone together and be able to be together. And I have to ditto the thank you to this church for lending their auditorium to Wide Horizon and letting us be able to be together in communion, to be of one accord. So what a great time it is today. What a great step forward it is today. As you've heard before, Wide Horizon's theme for this year was Mrs. Eddy's statement about love inspires, illumines, designates, and leads the way. And the title of this talk, as you just heard, is The Presence of God's Grace, which I think fits really nicely together, don't you? Because wouldn't the presence of God's grace naturally be that love that inspires, illumines, designates, and leads the way in exactly the way each of us needs it, when we need it, and how we need it? My heart just really overflows with that wonderful sense of God's grace, and what a comfort it is. You may remember that a few months ago, we had a lesson on sacrament. And in that lesson, they mentioned grace a lot of times. And it got me to thinking, do I really understand the concept of grace? Do I practice it? How do I practice it? How does it affect my activities, my practice, my family, and my church family? So I began to dig in a little bit to learn more about this grace. Let's visit for just a moment the meaning of grace from the Bible. In 2 Corinthians, we learn that grace is sufficient. It is enough. It is all we need to overcome any shortcoming, challenge, wilderness experience through the love and knowledge of the Christ. Why? Because it is, in fact, the presence of God's grace that is sufficient. We learn, too, in John, that the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. The following are a few more familiar citations on grace from the Bible. From Colossians, we are instructed to let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. And from Titus, we hear the promise of deliverance when he says, the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men. Not just some, but to all men. And from the writings of Mary Baker Eddy, we have from Science and Health, give us grace for today. Feed the famished affections. And we have grace and truth are potent beyond all other means and methods. And we have that cherished, gentle directive of what we most need is the prayer of fervent desire for growth in grace, expressed in patience, meekness, love, and good deeds. And then from Mrs. Eddy's article, Christian Science versus Pantheism, we learn that all this is accomplished by the grace of God, the effect of God understood. These are just a few of the references to grace. You might be interested to note that there are 159 references to grace in the Bible, 73 in Mrs. Eddy's writings, and 93 in our Christian Science hymnal, and over 25,000 on JSH Online. So you see, there's plenty of sources and resources to research and dig deeper into this concept of grace. Next, I went to the Students' Reference Dictionary to find out what they said about grace. And they've got a lot of definitions on grace, but I just picked out a few. Favor, goodwill, kindness, disposition to oblige another, and the divine influence or the influence of the Spirit in renewing the heart and restraining from sin. But the following definition is the one that really opened my thought. And I began to look for grace more throughout my day, every day. It's the definition of grace as given in Strong's Exhaustive Concordance to the Bible, which I know many of you are very familiar with. It says, grace, the divine influence upon the heart and its reflection in the life. That really got me to thinking, am I expressing that divine influence of the heart in every aspect of my life? Am I seeing it demonstrated in my life? You can ask my husband. He really got me to question a few things. The Bible, from beginning to end, is a book about grace, as we witness the many ways how the prophets of old learned about, experienced, and expressed grace. Now, you heard from Sue about the workshops that they gave at different churches. We had one at the Colorado Springs Church, and it was very informative and very helpful. So I'm not going to go into detail about it because Sue just explained it nicely. But I want to tell you, one of the things that impressed me the most was the question that was asked. It went something like this. In what ways have any of us, those in the audience, expressed or experienced nursing? At first, I'm thinking, well, I've only really needed a nurse one time. I haven't really been in a position to be a nurse. Until I heard some of the answers, things like raising children, helping parents, grandparents, or neighbors, etc., it really stirred my thought to review and consider all the ways each of us, every one of us, daily express and demonstrate the qualities that would fall under the heading of nursing. It called my attention to, and with great appreciation, to think about the many ways and opportunities we each have to express the qualities of a Christian Science nurse. We're all familiar with Mrs. Eddy's description of nurse as found in our textbook. She says, the nurse should be cheerful, orderly, punctual, patient, full of faith, receptive to truth and love. I think that goes for us too, doesn't it? That wonderful definition. All of which each of us have the opportunity of expressing in our individual daily lives. This is where the title of the talk actually came to me. As I was thinking about these definitions, it occurred to me that they clearly define the Christian Science nurse. They are, in fact, we all are, the epitome of the presence of God's grace, the divine influence upon the heart, the reflection and demonstration of life. As we each are on a path of being progressive, productive, practicing and devoted students of Christian Science, aren't we all motivated and inspired to daily and hourly achieve and express the vitality, energy, endurance, and steadfastness often required of a nurturing individual, as well as embracing the love and the graciousness of the spiritual qualities constituting our true spiritual selfhood? As you know, this requires of us daily, hourly, the Christianization of thought expressed in each deed and activity that we carry out. We are aware of the responsiveness, generosity, and unification of love only as we are loving. We feel the energy, resourcefulness, and radiance of spirit in proportion as we enlighten thought. We exhibit the authority, authenticity, and dependability of truth as our spiritualized thought saves us from any uncertainty. This practice preserves our sense of good and so preserves our harmonious sense of human mind and body for ourselves and all our thoughts rest upon. Let me share with you here my one personal experience with being in the care of a Christian Science nurse. It was late afternoon, moving into early evening on a Saturday, when I had to call a nurse, or I did call a nurse. My husband and I were busy emptying river rock from the back bed of our truck into a window well. And we were all done. The task was completed, and I was turned around backwards to step off the truck, and I misstepped and fell backwards full force on the ground, hitting my head on a landscape rock. Of course, my husband was at my side immediately, sharing truths with me, some of which I was able to process, but it appeared I might be losing consciousness. But I did remember some fragments of what I had worked on earlier that day in my daily identification work. I've been praying specifically, declaring my oneness with mind, that my consciousness was a reflection of God's consciousness, that what mind knows, I know by reflection, that my intelligence and ability is the product of the one mind, that I will always know and have just what I need at the right time and in the right way. Feeling a little bit like Humpty Dumpty, and like maybe I needed to hold my head together because it felt like the size of a watermelon, I knew it was time to insist that harmony was the law. When I was finally able to get up and go into the house, the physical evidence indicated that there was a serious head wound, so we called our local Christian Science nurse to assist. When the nurse arrived, she found the wound was already beginning to close, but did need some attention, which she did with gentleness, precision, joyfulness, and even a little bit of humor. I don't remember how long it took to care for the wound, but I do recall the complete and fearless comfort I felt as they worked. Feeling refreshed and more together, I continued to refute the animal magnetism arguments that there could be any residual after effects or that there was a threat of something more serious. By morning, the swelling had gone down, the pain was gone, and I was able to be at my post as first reader. I thank that nurse for her promptness and her skillful care and the comfort I felt when she was there. Now, let's talk about Moses for a moment. I love the Bible stories. I'm sure most of you do too. And the different characters and the lessons they each teach us about the relevance of their stories in our current life, our daily life. As you know, Moses saw a burning bush and he was attracted to it. And he stopped to examine it more closely, wondering why it was burning, but it wasn't consumed. When God saw this inquisitiveness, he called out to Moses, introduced himself, and told Moses he was on holy ground, but not to be afraid. Then God shared his plan with Moses. You all know the plan. God called upon Moses to bring the Israelites out of Egypt, freeing them from captivity and bondage of every sort. And Moses, as you know, was reluctant to accept this task from God and stated a series of excuses, indicating that he was not up to the task or perhaps felt incapable to perform what was being asked of him. Moses actually argued with God. Can you believe that? None of us have ever done that, have we? At least not successfully, right? So on with Moses. Moses improperly identified himself by accepting that he was a mortal, incapable, inadequate, lacking in many ways. We don't do that either, do we? No. So one of Moses' false claims about himself was a feeling of personal unfitness. Why me, he said. I don't know enough. Thus expressing a belief of incompleteness, of lack, of skepticism, of doubt. Isn't this one of mortal mind's tools to undermine, to plant the seed of doubt, to manipulate man into believing he is incompetent, not qualified, inept, inefficient, and lacking in some way? Wasn't Moses denying the ever-presence and the all-power of divine mind, the all-knowing and infinite ability of that mind? Perhaps Moses hadn't realized yet that God, our Father, Mother, God, gives us, each of us, an abundance of resources, the ability to make good decisions, express wit, intelligence, good sense, worth, and value. Moses was perhaps thinking that the problem was too big. But in reality, his thinking was too small. Why? For he was thinking he was doing all the work, when in reality, it was God's work to do. We've all had several Moses experiences in our lifetime. Here's one of mine involving that universal concept of nursing we mentioned earlier. Once I was asked to assist a beloved family member for 3 days, which I was delighted to do, and said, yeah, absolutely, I'd be happy to do that. This individual had been struggling with a physical problem that required attending to and changing a sensitive and unsightly dressing. As I said, my response was immediate. So what did I do? I went home and cried, and then cried some more. Why did I commit to this? Why did I say I could do it? I was struggling with those thoughts. What followed was a laundry list of Moses' excuses and objections, Moses' mode of thinking of why I shouldn't or couldn't do this task. The arguments of, I don't know how. I might hurt them. I don't know if I can handle the visual, be unimpressed by the material picture. Can I really hold it all together? Was the bottom line question. These thoughts flooded my thought. I spent the evening praying with my Father, Mother, God to be able to do what I was being required to do with some semblance of order, know-how, and most of all, compassion. After all, they were the ones with the challenge, not me, right? So I prayed to see them only as God sees them, to know them only as mind knows them, to have the resource of spirit to do what needs to be done with grace, to know only the authenticity of truth and nothing else, and to love them only as love loves them. Well, I did care for this dear family member, and with complete freedom from all the mortal mind arguments, there was no trepidation, doubt, insecurity, and I was, in fact, able to see them as mind sees them. In hindsight, as this happened several decades ago, it was clearly an example of the presence of God's grace. So what does this grace look like? Isn't it the provision of the answers to each false belief of animal magnetism? God told Moses and me in his commanding but ever-loving clear voice, certainly I will be with thee, confirming man's inseparability from God and revealing Moses' true image, his true identification, one of potential, ability, confidence, courage, and leadership. Just as he sees and shows each of us today, right now, our true image, our true identification, and our true potential. This Moses story is a promise, a commitment, a certainty of the presence of God's grace. And just think about it. This is just in the beginning of the Bible. There are hundreds, thousands of these promises, commitments, certainties throughout the Bible. And each of us can rely on And they are the very foundation from which we each can work out from to be the nurturing nurse we may sometime be required to be. In preparation for this talk, I decided to talk with some friends and family members who are currently serving as Christian Science nurses and hear what is important to them. Here are some of their responses. I know you'll find them inspiring and uplifting as I did. The first point made was the desire to do something manually based that couldn't be varied greatly by human interpretation. I love that thought. Another point, or another person filled out, it was to fill Jesus' commands to be a servant, to wash one another's feet. His parable of the king in Matthew, quote, "Inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me." And then she followed it up with a very sincere thought. It is clearly so Christian, so biblical. Isn't that so very heartwarming, genuine and sincere? Boy, those are the kind of nurses I want caring for me. How about you? That sound about right? And then continuing on, another one shared, because the demand for pure Christianity is so high as one does the work, like a pure heart, loving, patience, receptivity, spirituality, joy, the fruits of spirit, it is very obvious when one seemingly is falling short of that demand. But then comes the recognition that mortal mind is trying to separate the laborers from the field and under the guise of difficult this or difficult that. They then continued, I guess the difficulty comes in whatever cross we need to bear until it's no longer a cross anymore. And we gain the crown. I love the purity and the insightfulness of that comment, and I've thought about it many times since I've been talking with that individual. Again, that's what we want our nurses to be thinking, right? But isn't it also what we need to be thinking in our day-to-day lives when we're doing deeds and activities for others? We also have a wonderful example of winning the crown through the story of Joseph from the book of Genesis. Remember the story of Joseph and how he handled adversity and all the different crises in his life? Mary Baker Eddy calls them trials. But with each new adventure, trial, negative as it was, as hopeless as it may have seemed, Joseph was a model in the exercise of wisdom, good judgment, exhibiting calmness in crisis, as well as leadership. He demonstrated an unshakable faith, adaptability, grace, and courage. Simply, he trusted the presence of God's grace in every circumstance. Joseph was unimpressed with the material conditions and circumstances and continued serving God, thus doing his highest sense of right under God's direction in each and every situation by realizing God's constant, stable, consistent presence. You might recall he was thrown into a pit by his brothers and left to die and then sold into slavery. And he was falsely accused of adultery and thrown into prison. While he was in prison, he was put in charge of some of the other prisoners. And after a time, he was summoned to interpret a dream for the Pharaoh of Egypt and became the second in command of Egypt as a result of that interpretation of the dream. I think it's interesting to note that when Pharaoh asked Joseph to interpret his dream, Joseph went straight to God for the answer and answered Pharaoh by saying, "It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace." We too can be a Joseph and immediately turn to and acknowledge that it is God that gives us peace, guidance, stability, and confidence in every situation, no matter how humanly serious it seems to be. There's no record of Joseph running to his friends, fellow co-workers, or a higher up to change or alter or correct anything or to rectify anything. Rather, he expressed the stability of knowing that right where he was, right there, was the help he needed, recognizing the ever-presence of the one mind to provide the solutions, the wisdom, the assurance that all is well. We too can do the same, even with all the dire predictions, assumptions, reports of unrest and disruption that seem prevalent in our world today. Just like Moses and Joseph and the other prophets of the Bible, we can learn, listen, and be obedient to God's direction. We can and must be mentally and spiritually prepared to refute and replace the fake news of mortality with the reality of man's true identity and the world's true spirituality. We must not partake of the rotten fruit, the fabricated fruit, of the tree of good and evil. We must remain undisturbed amid the myriad reports, realize and acknowledge that the authority of the science of Christ is still in operation and is still effective, that this divine principle is infinite, embracing all mankind, and that this unity that exists between God and his idea must be evidenced in life practice. Eventually, Joseph's life came full circle as he was reunited with his brother and father, even providing for them in time of great need with love and forgiveness. Each human experience he passed through essentially prepared him for the next step in the progress of his spiritual advancement. Isn't this winning the crown that dear nurse mentioned? Like Joseph, we must actively, consistently, daily talk with God. God is our best friend. Ask him for guidance. Let him know your concerns, needs, doubts, uncertainties, your desires. Intimately know his voice and be ready to listen carefully when he speaks, and to be willing to follow his direction, rejoicing all the rugged way. It is having the humility to let go of any last bit of human will or human comfort and give ourselves entirely over to divine love. Our answers may come in a multitude of different ways, but you will recognize his voice from your daily interactions with him. They may come as inspiration or an aha moment, a suggestion from another or a needed resolution, or maybe, just maybe, the proverbial 2x4 that we all need once in a while. At least I can speak for myself on that one. But always, these messages bring peace. Be ready, willing, and able to accept what he has to offer without question. Isn't that what Moses needed to learn? Which Moses did, and Joseph did, the Christ did, and Mary Baker Eddy did. Watch out for that sneaky, devilish enemy, the serpent, that may be standing at the door of thought, masquerading as good, and yet actually barring the entrance of truth. Take decisive action to be mentally prepared and insist on witnessing truth alone every day. Life is a continuous thread of demonstrating the omnipotence of God, the presence of God's grace. If you were to write your own story, you would see how each step propelled you forward, made you grow, and gave you the tools of inspiration, patience, judgment, decisiveness, to be ready for the next adventure. Mrs. Eddy tells us in Miscellany, and I'd like to read it in her own words, "Remember, thou canst be brought into no condition, be it ever so severe, where love has not been before thee, and where its tender lesson is not awaiting thee." Now, let's talk about dominion for a minute. Several people in the speeches mentioned dominion, and I just must have tuned in because I have some things to say about dominion here. In Genesis 1, God, Elohim, has given us the gift of dominion, a true gift. I have this image of God handing me this beautifully wrapped package and saying, "Here, take this. It's the gift of dominion, self-government, self-knowledge," and telling me to use it wisely, to cherish it, to keep my eyes wide open to the proper uses of it, and not to waste it or misuse it. The beauty of this gift is that it won't ever wear out, get tired, need parts, or break down, nor does it ever get rusty from lack of use, perhaps a form of misuse. Rather, it is always fresh, constant, consistent, ever ready, ever active, ever present, and it is ours just for the taking. And what is this dominion? It is defined as divine supreme authority. Who wouldn't want this gift? Who wouldn't cherish it? Who wouldn't use it? Let's make it our own on a regular basis. And isn't it the presence of God's grace just waiting to be utilized? Didn't the Master show us the way to have dominion or power by disclosing the basis and principle of dominion when he said in John, "I can of mine own self do nothing. I and my Father are one. I do nothing of myself, but as my Father hath taught me." Mary Baker Eddy describes that this way. She says, "Jesus cast out evil spirits or false beliefs. The Apostle Paul bade men have the mind that was in the Christ. Jesus did his own work by the one Spirit. He said, 'My Father worketh hitherto, and I work.'" So we're never alone. It's all been laid out for us, hasn't it? Even this wonderful, unbreakable partnership with God. Jesus acted with power by reason of his relation to God, by virtue of man's unity with infinite mind, and showed us how to do the same, thus expressing complete dominion. What might be the main reason for the lack of man expressing dominion? Isn't it the common error that man believes he is a material selfhood, dependent on self, and separated from the infinite mind, like Moses? Like many of us sometimes, we may mistakenly think that we are separate, but we are not, cannot be. This dominion or authority isn't based on some kind of material superpower. It is based on the natural and obvious supremacy of divine spirit over its supposed opposite, matter. It's a supremacy implicit in the very fact that according to Genesis 1, God, Elohim, has created man in his own image, spiritual and not material. We aren't, then, subject to or subservient to earthly influences from the tree of good and evil found in Genesis 2, which isn't real anyway. Many theologians through the centuries have felt that humanity has lost the gift of dominion. The second and third chapters of Genesis demonstrate allegorically just how that loss is believed to have occurred. In this material account of creation, the Lord God creates a man who's the very antithesis of the man in the first chapter of Genesis, the man with dominion over all the earth. This second man we refer to as the Genesis 2 man. This man is made of matter. He's not the image of spirit, and far from having dominion over the earth, he appears to be weak, easily swayed, impressed, and manipulated into disobeying God and rejecting his authority. I know that doesn't describe any of us either. Why? Because Jesus Christ taught all of us how to have spiritual dominion as the children of God, showing us that we are actually the image and likeness, the workmanship of our true parent. And Jesus didn't just talk about dominion. He lived it by demonstrating the power of God to overcome all types of false claims of the Genesis 2 man, dread diseases, insanity, power politics, financial insecurity, catastrophic events, and even death. How did he face these adversaries? Not by fighting back or arguing, but by helping people, us, to understand that they could live where no oppression could touch them, in God's heavenly kingdom, giving man dominion over all the earth. Isn't dominion, then, another way of demonstrating the presence of God's grace? Jesus demonstrated this dominion to us by teaching us the truth of being through living it. As you know, he consistently and constantly partnered with the Father. He expressed great calm, peacefulness, and was unflappable in every situation as a result of this God-given dominion, which we also have. To have this same presence, we must embrace spiritual power through spiritual sense as he did, thus showing the nature of dominion as being normal and natural. Dominion is the power to invoke the divine law, to maintain the divinely ordained order. It is the power to overcome evil with good, whereby God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven. It is the power to dispel error and truth and to demonstrate the truth of being. Another quote from Mrs. Eddy from Science and Health. I've got the wrong page here. She says, "The human mind will sometime rise above all material and physical sense, exchanging it for spiritual perceptions and exchanging human concepts for the divine consciousness. Then man will recognize his God-given dominion and being." How? Through exchanging human concepts for the divine consciousness, thus experiencing the presence of God's grace. This is a lesson I had to learn several decades ago. For more than 20 years, I was a single mom with 4 children of my own and a niece to raise. When asked how did I manage, I would jokingly say, "Do you not see the calluses on my knees?" Of course, indicating a lot of prayer, and this often would bring a slight laugh. But then I realized, somewhere along the line, that that was putting all the onus on me, the responsibility completely on me, leaving God, the true parent, totally out of the picture. Enter Moses again. Each time the Israelites would come to him with their fears, dissatisfactions, complaints, wants, and voicing their woes, What would he do? He learned first to go to God for direction, guidance, reassurance, and certainty. As I began to more and more do the same, not only did my thought shift, but my response to the question changed also. Developing a deeper dependence on my father and mother and a better understanding about who was really caring for these dear children and me also as a child of God, my response became, by the grace of God. While I still may not have fully known or understood the impact of that statement, I was beginning to glimpse the presence and power of grace, that divine influence upon the heart in my life, and how it was maintaining and sustaining my family. The result? We all made it, all in one piece, and are all very close. Speaking of children, how many of you teach Sunday school? Hands? More hands? Okay. We all certainly need the presence of God's grace then sometimes, don't we? It's true. Jesus had a practice of seeing beyond physical appearances to spiritual reality. When sick people came to him for help, he saw only a healthy child of God within and brought it out for them to see. Jesus' spiritual point of view transformed people for the better. When teaching Sunday school, there's an exercise that I would do to illustrate man as idea, forever one with its source, unchangeable, unalterable, indestructible, and eternal. I would have the students draw a picture of something that they liked, and giving them plenty of time to put the detail in it, and sometimes I'd even give them colored pencils to make it look more like what their mental picture is. And then I'd have them describe to the rest of the students in the class what they drew and why. And they, after they all shared, then I'd have them crumple it all up. Pretty shocking, huh? After they'd spent all that time on it. So why would I do that? What are your thoughts? Any thoughts? I did it to illustrate the fact that the original concept was untouched, unmarred, unadulterated, undiminished. It is still in perfect order, intact and whole. The concept remained perfect in thought, undistorted, unchanged, and unimpaired in any way. Then I would ask the students this question: can mortal mind change, adulterate, or destroy God's thought about you in any way? Of course not. Mrs. Eddy expresses it in this way: every object in material thought will be destroyed, but the spiritual idea, whose substance is in mind, is eternal. That never changes. Doesn't this experience or this exercise help the students practice seeing beyond the physical appearance to the spiritual reality? Doesn't it bring out the healthy child of God from within? And isn't that what we are all striving for? To look beyond the material to the spiritual? Another Sunday school exercise we often did to emphasize the power and ability to see only the spiritual concept of man, and these are things that all the prophets needed to learn, was to ask the class which synonym they felt they expressed the best and which synonym they thought they needed to do better. Often this brought about the expected Sunday school answers, which would then be questioned. What did they actually mean by what they just told me? Why is it important? Always encouraging them to dig deeper and to put it in their own words. Then sometimes the answers were truly from the heart and needed the loving attention of all the students to work through the situation. Like the time one student said they needed to learn more about love. That was a bit of a surprise. When questioned why they thought that, They were very forthright and referred to another student in the class that they said they didn't like at all and certainly couldn't love. Wow. Definitely not a Sunday school answer, right? But a wonderful opportunity to explore further the true concept of the synonym of love and how it related to the individuals and the situation. After recovering from the surprise of such honesty, one by one, each student would put forth a question or idea that would cut through the material surface of things to the spiritual reality. One student suggested that they look for the commonality between them, and with joy and surprise, realized that that commonality was based on the attributes of spirit and not human characteristics. Another student pointed out that although their human circumstances were quite different, the fact that they both are an idea of God connected them so completely, how could there be any dislike or unloving feelings? The end result? They found many ways they actually were connected, and a respectful friendship began to grow. Let me share how Mrs. Eddy talks about that kind of a thought. This is in Miscellany, if I can get the right page here. She says, holding the right idea of man in my mind, I can improve my own and other people's individuality, health, and morals, whereas the opposite image of man, a sinner, kept constantly in mind, can no more improve health or morals than holding in thought the form of a boa constrictor can aid an artist in painting a landscape. Says it pretty clearly, doesn't it? She knows just how to say things, doesn't she? Very clearly. I'd say through the presence of God's grace, we were able to do a lot of growing and improving that day. The Bible tells us that grace is not something we have to earn or deserve. The loving kindness, mercy, and abundant joy of grace is a gift, freely received and freely given. A few weeks ago, the phrase of no unpredictability kept coming to my thought. It's based on the conviction and understanding, as we learn in Christian Science, that there is only the uninterrupted continuity of good. This is Eddie's words. That this is the scientific fact, my words, of no unpredictability. Mrs. Eddy writes, divine science, and this is in Science and Health, divine science reveals the eternal chain of existence as uninterrupted and wholly spiritual. Yet this can be realized only as the false sense of being disappears. This illustrates for me the fact, the scientific fact, of no unpredictability in relation to world situations, political circumstances, weather, human situations, as well as any bodily action. We can know, must know, that all real action originates in and is governed by divine mind, not by matter. Or that any action can suddenly get out of control or lapse into abnormality. So the fact there is no unpredictable action because there is no unpredictable God. Because we know God as constant, unchanging, steady, stable, unwavering, undeviating, divine principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. That's how we know God. Unchanging. Well, one might say, what about the storms we just experienced? What about the political climate? What about the concern of financial instability? And what about the Ukrainian situation? Do we just pretend they didn't happen? Or it doesn't matter because it doesn't affect me? No, absolutely not. We can and must hold to the fact of the conviction and understanding of the uninterrupted continuity of good that divine mind provides. He provides wisdom, intelligence, ingenuity, discipline, and insight for those that seem to be affected by the unpredictability of the human experience, always blessing them in just the right way. Having lived on the Outer Banks, a barrier island off the coast of North Carolina for a couple of decades, and having experienced many hurricanes, and the fact that my son and his family still live there, I can speak from experience about the storms. Two of the Bible verses I often work with, not just for the storms, but for all things. One comes from Proverbs. Be not afraid of sudden terror and panic, nor of the stormy blast of the storm and ruin of the wicked when it comes. There are a lot of things that that would be describing, isn't it, in today's world? And the other one is from Psalms, one of my very favorites and one of my really go-to type things. The Lord will perfect that which concerneth me. Thy mercy, O Lord, endureth forever. Forsake not the works of thine own hands. He's not going to give up on us. He's not going to forsake us. While we have seen over the years storms, fires, floods, all causing a great deal of damage, we must continue to know that the presence of God's grace is right there, right where there seems to be so much devastation. And this grace brings the healing of restoration, renewing, regeneration, reinventing, reestablishing, and reinvigorating. While listening to the explanatory note read from the desk last Sunday, a new and renewed inspiration flooded my thought. As you know, it reads in part, "Constitute a sermon undivorced from truth." Doesn't that apply to our daily life as well? We must declare and establish for all mankind that there can be no separation, disconnect, abandonment, or devastation for God's idea or God's plan of action for man. And what about the word uncontaminated? We hear about that with the floodwaters. We hear about that with the fire stuff. We must claim that our purity, righteousness, innocence, freedom is unspoiled, untouched, unadulterated, and unblemished. And then we have that sweet phrase of unfettered by human hypotheses. We can know without a doubt that we are unlimited, unrestrained, unhindered, unhampered, unrestricted, unimpeded in every sense of the word, and are not and cannot be held hostage to any human situation. And what about the last part about divinely authorized? To me, this is the bonus, because we each, every one of us, each individual is completely governed, maintained, and sustained by divine mind. We are divinely authorized to claim our peace, harmony, unity with the all-knowing Father, Mother, God. For as the Bible tells us in Psalms, this is Psalm 62, "Truly my soul waiteth upon God. From him cometh my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved." Don't mind, I'm going to take a sip. With many issues facing the world today, There seems to be no viable human solutions, and yet we have grace, the divine influence of the heart reflected in life. Grace, God's free gift to man. Grace, divine power. God's grace is not miraculous. It appears in one consciousness through the development of the Christly power. Through Christ Jesus, who revealed the love of the divine Father and showed mankind, all mankind, how one can benefit from God's healing grace through prayer. Through this realization, the divine healing presence is operative, practical, evident to the human experience through grace. The patient is healed, healing the false sense of life in matter. And when the thought is opened, it is the free gift of God to all. No one, absolutely no one, is beyond its saving influence. And let me close with a verse from Ephesians. This is Ephesians 2. Again, if I can get the right page. For by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God. Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. That your thoughts about grace will resonate with all of us a long time. Before we close, I briefly wanted to thank so much Brian Johnson and Michael Eilenberg for their help with our sound and our broadcast. And to thank Jan Dillingham for helping us with our hymns, playing with our hymns. And let's close with our namesake hymn, hymn 218.